They were high school sweethearts that got married and had two kids. It's the Brunettes. From a new location, they tweet all day, but that's okay. They're the Brunettes. She is a journalist. He is a wonk.
Wonk, wonk, wonk.
They talk about the news or whatever they want. In the fight for justice, they're on your side. You can't deny it's the Brunettes.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to our low-effort, low-quality podcast. This is Liz Brunig. This is my husband, Matt.
Hello, everyone.
It's been a big week, so we have quite a bit of content for you today on the pod.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, think of all the stuff that's happened. Do you want to start with an audio grab bag? Is there one?
No, there's not.
There's no audio grab bag.
Mm-mm.
All right, well, let's start with the news of the day. Which is a very hot guy apparently killed the CEO, one of the CEOs of United Healthcare. I was told by someone that he's not the CEO of United Healthcare, that he's like an upper level executive. But
well, United Health Group
yeah.
consists of a number of subsidiary corporations, and he is the CEO of one of those. And it is the part that deals with insurance.
Yeah. So, Brian Thompson, the CEO, was coming to an investors meeting at a hotel in Manhattan. And this guy in a hoodie apparently went to Starbucks, although a lot of people are saying that's not the same guy. But it appears for the moment, he went to Starbucks and then he walked out and came up behind Brian Thompson, shot him in the back 3 times. The shell casings said what? Deny, defend, depose.
The story starts a little bit before then. The police are saying that he took a bus that originated in Atlanta, though he may have gotten on anywhere from Atlanta to New York City, approximately 10 days before the shooting, checked into this hostel, and was essentially, you know, would go down during the day and check out where he was going to do it and, you know, kind of get his plan together.
Case the joint, yeah.
Yeah. And then day of went down. And
yeah.
Like you said, from there, Starbucks and all the rest of it.
Yeah, and they've released pictures of this guy's face. But as I said, there's a lot of disagreement as to whether the face pics actually belong to the killer.
So there's people online who are, they're just comparing the pictures.
Yeah.
And that's the only information. But when you read the stories, the police are saying not just like, wow, we think this looks like him. They're saying, we followed this guy through, you know, cameras.
Yeah.
And this guy at the hostel is the same guy who, you know, was there for 10 days and we followed him one day going down to the hotel where he did the shooting, but was 3 days before,
was he wearing a mask and shit the whole time?
Everything has been masked except for the one picture at the hostel.
Yeah.
Where the story is supposed to be that the lady behind the desk asked him to show his face in a flirtatious manner.
Yeah. And he smiled at her. If that is the guy, you know, without condoning murder, what a cutie.
I don't know.
Yeah. So one of the things that happened after the shooting of Thompson, is the entire world celebrated.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's been quite a reaction. I don't know if you saw the news from last night. Maybe not.
No, I doubt it.
You just woke up, but they found his backpack.
Okay.
In Central Park. Mm-hmm. So he did the shooting. He got on a city bike, which are the little bike share bikes. I assume an electric one. And rode up into Central Park and ditched the backpack presumably changed his clothes. And the backpack was found today, and it had a jacket in it, and it had Monopoly money in it.
Okay.
So another gesture, presumably.
Yeah.
Just like the bullet casing words.
Yeah.
Deny, defend, oppose. And then there was also a picture of him on the getting into the taxi
mm-hmm.
that he took to the bus terminal that he left from.
Okay.
So the story, you know, I guess to complete it all for people who aren't paying attention is comes in 10 days before on a bus, cases things out, shoots a guy, rides a bike into Central Park, ditches some stuff, rides the bike out of Central Park, gets into a taxi back to the bus station, and then rides the bus away. The reason to believe that there was a really funny quote on this where the police were like, we have video of him going into the bus station but not leaving, so we have reason to believe he got on a bus.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. When you go to a bus station, that's probably what you got on your mind.
Yeah, or maybe he was just going to pop in and pop out as part of his sick game.
Yeah.
But
people
no.
are also just... So aside with everyone, you know, aside from everyone being like, fuck yeah. And I mean, people you wouldn't expect, dude. It's not just like dirtbag leftists being like, haha, yes, health insurance CEO was killed. I read People magazine, which is just a celebrity gossip rag.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at their Instagram account and they had a little news alert about the guy. And fucking a bunch of random People magazine readers were like, sorry, my thoughts and prayers are out of network. People posted the picture of the guy and were like, have you seen this man? And everyone's like, no, I haven't seen anything. Sorry, vision is out of network.
Yeah, Ben Shapiro did a video on TikTok where he was like, the sick left is celebrating this. And then his followers, you know, commented all these things about, you know.
Celebratory things?
Yeah, like he was getting roasted by his own followers.
Damn. That's got to be a common experience for Ben Shapiro. Yeah. The guy, what do you think the motive is? You had an interesting take on this.
Let me see. I want to try something here for a second.
All right.
Because so Eric Adams was asked about it, and I haven't heard this audio, but let me see.
The manner in which they were able to follow his footsteps to recover evidence. Some of it is known, some of it is unknown, but the net is tightening, and we're going to bring this person to justice.
All right.
We've also learned investigators may have gone to Atlanta today because at this point, police believe the shooter came into New York City on November 24th, 10 days before the attack on a bus from Atlanta.
Anyways, I thought that I'd read that he suggested that they knew his name, but that they weren't going to release it.
Oh, yeah, I read that as well.
But
they're like, someone said naming him would give him the upper hand. I remember seeing that news alert.
Oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah. Would give him the upper hand, but like revealing that you know it doesn't give him the upper hand.
Yeah, I don't.
I could see a situation where you don't want anyone to know that you know the name.
Yeah, why would that be?
Because, well, I don't know. Maybe I can't see a world where it's important that you not reveal his name because you're worried about him.
Mm-hmm.
But you think it's a good idea to reveal that you have his name.
Yeah.
Because if you're trying to spook him, you know, he's probably already spooked by you indicating that. Unless it's just a kind of a weird thing. Why wouldn't you just either be totally silent on it or just go ahead and put it out?
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Now, it's an interesting situation, I guess. The amount of resources that are being expended seems to be tremendous.
Yeah, like, I wonder why. There are so many murders in New York.
I just didn't even realize. I mean, you know, to be able to trace this guy across all these different cameras. And I mean, this must have been quite an undertaking. I mean, to get the taxi camera footage, you know, as far as I understand, it's not like all this information just sits in some big bank somewhere. And you have to like go contact the business or the taxi man or whatever. Maybe some of it feeds directly into the NYPD, but I suspect, you know, a lot of it doesn't. But yeah, anyways, yeah, no, the reaction has been pretty wild.
Yeah.
you know, Yeah, you were saying my theory. I mean, when I see it and I see, you know, the fact that he's written that on the bullet casings, and maybe it's also just kind of like the visual of like this young white fellow masked up and whatever.
Yeah.
It's very very reminiscent of a sort of anarchist thing. And even this sort of like assassinations and the propaganda of the deed type stuff that you read in anarchist circles.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like to me.
Yeah.
Let's see, what do we have here on Wikipedia? Propaganda of the deed is specific political direct action meant to be exemplary to others and serve as a catalyst for revolution. It's primarily associated with acts of violence perpetrated by proponents of insurrectionary anarchism in the late 19th and early 20th century, including bombings and assassinations aimed at the state, the ruling class in the spirit of anti-capitalism, and church arsons targeting religious groups. So it reminds me of that stuff from, you know, anarchist thought and whatever. Mm-hmm. There's some examples of this. Let's see. Luigi Lucchini stabs to death Empress Elizabeth.
Damn. All right. Got him.
The shooting of William McKinley was done by an anarchist in this respect.
Yeah.
He was killed in electric chair. It's a lot of political stuff, but occasionally you get some, here's a bomb prepared for use at John D. Rockefeller's home, explodes prematurely, killing three anarchists.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
So they attempted to bomb him. There was a Wall Street bombing that killed 38 people in 1920.
Yeah, I remember the anarchists used to bomb the shit out of stuff, man.
These were the Galenists.
Okay.
The Galenist, he was the Luigi Galenist, he was the guy that killed, didn't I just say this? Elizabeth?
Yeah, Empress Elizabeth.
Yeah, Luigi Lucchini.
Lucchini.
Oh, this is another guy. Excuse me. Anyways, sorry. Luigi Gallieni, a lot of Italian anarchists. He was a guy in the U.S. and he had like a little clique of people that would bomb, you know, capitalists and Wall Street and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But the list of notable incidents on Wikipedia ends in 1932.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we haven't seen a whole lot of that since then. The anarchists these days, when they get into this kind of direct political action, and I've seen it around animal liberation, you know?
Animal Liberation Front people.
And then we see this sort of like black bloc type stuff where you smash store windows and set cop cars on fire and stuff like that. I don't know that these are really propaganda. The animal stuff, I think, would be propaganda of the deed.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of Windows stuff, it's a little bit unclear. I guess you would say it's not very good propaganda of the deed.
Yeah.
Right? And that, I guess, is what is interesting about this is, for better or worse, you know, regardless of the sort of underlying morality of the act itself, it does seem to have been done in a way that does make it function as propaganda of the deed in an effective way.
Yeah, it worked, if that's what he was going for.
It focused a tremendous amount of attention on this, and it actually caused a lot of popular reaction, unlike, you know, when you march through downtown and smash windows or whatever, which mostly is not received positively.
Yeah.
This has been, and it also creates such a interesting, direct confrontation of, you know, what he's trying to emphasize. When you smash the windows, you can say, well, there's some abstract way in which this relates to anti-capitalism because there's these businesses, and, you know, you can kind of go that route, but it's sort of hard to put it together. But here, you know, the immediate question becomes, wait a minute, so obviously killing is wrong, so we've killed this guy and that's wrong, but he's also pointing out directly on the bullet casings that this guy has in his role in the society, that particular role, has done things that have, you know, or at least leads a team of people that do things through and benefit denials that lead to death.
Yeah.
That caused deaths. And then, you know, that's just put right out in front of you. And that's the immediate move when someone is like, oh my God, he murdered someone. They goes, oh, well, this guy's also murdered people.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay, well, now we got to start thinking about how do we make distinctions here between the sort of, I think what Engels called the social violence.
Yeah.
versus the more personally directed violence.
Reminds me of executioners who all say that they're not the ones who are doing it. It's like this...
Oh, social murder, excuse me.
Responsibility is really dispersed throughout a system of, you know, bureaucracy, which makes it hard to point to who is actually responsible for the violence. But I guess the whole system is violent, and this guy was a part of it.
Well, that's how the system... here's Engels. When one individual inflicts bodily injury upon another such that death results, we call the dead manslaughter, the deed manslaughter. When the assailant knew in advance that the injury would be fatal, we call his deed murder. But when society places hundreds of proletarians in such a position that they inevitably meet a too early and an unnatural death, one which is quite as much a death by violence as that by the sword or bullet, when it deprives thousands of the necessaries of life, places them under conditions in which they cannot live, forces them through the strong arm of the law to remain in such conditions until that death ensues, which is the inevitable consequence, knows that these thousands of victims must perish, and yet permits these conditions to remain. Its deed is murder just as surely as the deed of the single individual. Disguised, malicious murder, murder against which none can defend himself, which does not seem what it is, because no man sees the murderer, because the death of the victim seems a natural one, since the offense is more one of omission than of commission. But murder it remains. So that's what I think you're getting here, right? Is a propaganda of the deed move to make a point here about social murder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird in a way because social murder, the definition of it is that it occurs as an operation of the system.
Yeah.
In a way that, as he says, no man sees the murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the executions, like you say, there is a literal executioner, but in a sense, literally no one sees them because they're obscured.
Yeah.
But beyond that, they get to say, well, it wasn't me. It was the judge. It wasn't the judge. It was the legislator.
Yeah,
it was the jury.
Everyone's
moving around. I'm just a piece of a system. Mm-hmm. Culpability is diffuse, spread throughout the system. It could be the lawmaker. It could be the jury. It could be the judge. It could be the prosecutor. It could be me. It could, who knows?
Yeah.
If I weren't here, someone else would be here doing the same thing. The same for the CEO, right? If he wasn't the CEO, someone else would be the CEO. The same things would probably be occurring. You can say, look, it's not me. It's the board. It's not just, and then the board says, well, that's not us. We're operating within the laws of the system. And if we didn't operate this way, someone else would operate this way. We have to pursue profitability or the company will get taken over and that record, you know,
yeah,
the competitive dynamics of our economic system combined with a private health insurance model just requires this, necessitates this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. Mm-hmm. And in a kind of lightning bolt way, he's like, no, that guy.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, it's contestable whether you can put the finger on that guy. Personalizing the social murder.
Yeah.
Sense and then makes you talk about the social murder. And he managed to do it in a way that seems to have, you know, been effective in that respect.
It was extremely effective. You know, so much so that there's been a lot of coverage of people celebrating or at least taking some kind of pleasure in the murder.
Yeah, we're in an interesting setup where I don't think anyone in the media is would, you know, it's just too far gone to react that way. So there does seem to be, I would like to see a poll.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to see, because then I think that would give media a little bit of wiggle room, but there seems to be you don't see too many outlets, you know, like the New York Times is not going to run an op-ed saying this is good, you know, but it seems like a non-trivial portion of the society is reacting that way. But again, I'd like to see a poll, because, you know, maybe you know, these instances that you see online are you know, not typical.
Yeah, my feelings on this are mixed. You know, I have a no killing stance generally. And I understand this guy was responsible for the deaths of, like, literally untold thousands over the years. I mean, I can't imagine what that looks like or what the scale of it is. But at the same time, I don't want people killed who have murdered people quite directly. And that wouldn't change if they had killed lots and lots of people. It, you know, taken to the extreme, it's a position that holds, for example, that Hitler should have been apprehended and tried, which is a very difficult position to hold. But I am committed to the across the board anti-killing thing. So I have to say, I think the actual murder of the guy was wrong. But I certainly understand what everyone is saying when they celebrate, which is how much they fucking hate their healthcare. I think the groundswell of, you know, sort of laughter and Schadenfreude is about exactly that. It's a humor of despair, which is we're all stuck with this shitty health insurance market, and we hate it. It costs us a ton of money. It's difficult to navigate. They have policies of denying claims, just knowing that you won't pursue them. I think United Healthcare was using AI to...
A lot of people start searching for various things to try to... But yeah, I mean, United Healthcare, I think, like all of them, but maybe it a little bit more than others. Like, so sometimes you deny benefits because people are not... The plan just doesn't cover it. And yeah, that can be a very frustrating experience, mm-hmm, right? And, you know, who knows? What do you make of that, right? Like, well, if we have a system that doesn't cover certain kinds of treatments and the plans aren't set up that way, you know, like any system is going to have to create a universe of treatments that are covered and treatments that aren't, right? It's not as if you go to Canada and literally everything you could imagine that's sort of healthcare or adjacent to healthcare is covered by the insurance, mm-hmm, right? Everyone's making decisions around that, mm-hmm, experimental stuff, whatever, right?
Yeah.
But there's a, so that can be very frustrating to people though, mm-hmm, but then they might think the coverage is inadequate, mm-hmm, but then they say, well, that's what the plan is. That's what the system is. You bought the plan. This is a premium, you know, whatever. The thing that he is referencing, which I think may actually be the title of a book or an essay. Let me see if I can find that. Deny, defend, depose, meaning book. Delay, deny, defend. Mm-hmm. So he used different words.
Yeah.
But
consistent with your take that he's an anarchist, these are more anarchist-y words he used.
Delay, deny, defend, why insurance companies don't pay claims and what you can do about it is an ebook you can buy. I guess it's maybe a physical book as well. It was published in 2020. Mm-hmm. Did he read this? I mean, conceivably. Now, I don't know. You would think he would have got the words correctly.
Yeah.
Deny, maybe defend, he just, depose.
He wanted to reference it.
Riff on it
to
a little
refer
bit.
To it, but he has his own, he's got his own take as well.
But the point I was getting at, there is denying claims because the plan doesn't actually cover them. Mm-hmm. But then there's also denying claims that are actually covered, mm-hmm, that you are entitled to per your insurance contract. Yeah. And sometimes that can be an error.
Yeah.
And you can think, okay, you know, there's going to be errors in every system.
Yeah.
But sometimes it can be intentional. And there's a question here, and I assume this is what Jay Feinman in his book Delay, Deny, Defend is getting at. And it seems like it must be the case that that's a strategic thing to intentionally deny claims that are legitimate, mm-hmm, and that are eligible for reimbursement, to deny them on purpose,
yeah,
knowing that you'll save money as an insurer and therefore, you know, increase your profits.
Yeah.
And knowing that, okay, they can try to come and sue me for it, but how many people are going to do that?
Yeah.
Right? So this is delay, deny, defend. That's the defend part and the depose part as well, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, some small percentage of them are going to sue because, you know, we're illegally denying claims, but then we'll come, you know, aggressively after them. Mm-hmm. So right off the bat, a lot of them just won't, will just give up, and those that don't will go aggressively at them, and mm-hmm. they'll give up then, and then a few of them might make it through, and whatever. We've calculated that the net of all of that, of the legal expenses and all, the net of all that is still profitable.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do it. And that, I think, is where things get very, very questionable, mm-hmm. right? The rest of it is a little bit like, well, isn't that just the system? Isn't that just the system? Wouldn't any system have a coverage universe? And sure, sure, sure. But I don't think, for example, we have a lot of evidence of Medicare intentionally denying legitimate claims because they're trying to, like, profit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The public insurers, I don't think we have indicators of that.
Mm-hmm.
But a private insurer, yeah, that's a way to be profitable. But it's being profitable by breaking the law.
Yeah.
But that's, like, part of the game as well. It's like, well, if it's... We don't all just follow the law. We're also within a broader law where if you can break the law in a way that's profitable, you're supposed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of sick. And yeah. that's where I think there's room, wiggle room here.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things that is tough about sort of lawmaking and capitalism and whatever, right, is that we create an overall system where you're supposed to seek profit, and then we try to restrain it through rules that say, well, you can't seek profit this way, you can't seek profit that way.
Mm-hmm.
But those rules are not always strong enough or enforced well enough or penalized well enough to be enough to make people follow them. It can still be profitable on net to violate the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of what you also need is not just enough regulation to direct the profit motive in the right way, if that's what you want to think, but you also need corporate leaders to internalize this idea that I should also want to follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of what I'm doing here. Even if it would be profitable not to, I yeah. should do that. And that's where long little breadcrumb path to you could imagine.
Yeah.
This sort of reaction, this sort of act as maybe getting people to do that more.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
To be like, yeah, I could make money by acting in a way that is potentially illegal or like really beyond the pale, but mm-hmm. maybe part of what I'm doing here is also navigating a requirement to be socially conscious and, you know,
yeah.
You know, balancing that consideration, not just, you know, maximizing the bottom line.
Speaking of murders, do you remember the killing of Jordan Neely by Daniel Penny, the ex-Marine, on the subway?
I do, yeah.
Okay, well, that trial is about to conclude, but the judge, I believe, dismissed the manslaughter charge against Penny. So I believe a lesser charge remains, but he's not going to be convicted of, he hasn't been convicted of manslaughter, which was the most serious charge associated with the killing.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say. It sucks, right? You can't just strangle to death a mentally ill person for exhibiting symptoms of mental illness in public. This guy wasn't attacking anyone. He wasn't violent with anyone. He was yelling on the subway. I think there were original reports that he had thrown things at people. But later I read that had been thrown into question whether that really happened.
Oh, okay, I haven't been following the efforts to excavate the factual, you know, predicates of what he was doing
mm-hmm.
that led to it. Obviously, it's always a very big challenge when you're dealing with people having certain legal rights to defend themselves, if you will, but also not to, like, go too far. That seems to be part of the element of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's just a tricky thing. Like you're allowed to do a certain amount to like protect yourself, but not like be excessive about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that really rubs people the wrong way because they feel like, well, you know, if you're allowed to do anything, and then we also hold your hands behind your back. Like in the moment, if you're so heated in a fit of self-defense, you know, it might be hard to control yourself and not, you know, go that next bit. And also you might accidentally go too far and whatever. That seems to be a tension that's running through here, though it's not super well articulated
in the
discourse, which is mostly, unfortunately, been not about the mechanics of self-defense versus murder, and instead just kind of emoting about feelings about public order and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, I think you have to take the approach that killing is seriously wrong, that there are very, very, very few circumstances, very few, that I think would justify or make permissible, morally permissible killing. But I don't think it's ever a good thing to do. And so I disagreed with the kind of conservative take on Penny, which was that he was kind of a hero for taking a stand for public order, as you said.
This honestly goes through a lot of the police violence discourse as well.
Yeah.
Where it's not so much, or at least one of the threads running through it all that is not always articulated is this notion of like, I don't care if the cops break the law.
Yeah.
Because they're maintaining public order.
Right.
Like this is sort of a, you know,
they're the thin blue line between us and chaos.
Yeah, it's this sort of like rogue gang, and I don't care whether they, like, in fact, I'd like them to not. I think the law is restraining them in a way, and they need to be more liberated to crack some skulls and send some messages to get people on board.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, few people will articulate that directly because it's so illiberal to suggest that. And I think something happens here as well. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but
yeah,
I think that's a big part of it. There are many people who are very, very into public order, so defined, and do not care about adherence to the law in when it comes to trying to enforce it, whether that's police or civilians or whatever.
It just reminds me of Adorno. What book of his am I thinking of? The Stars Down to the Earth, you know, from which I gleaned the sense that fascism is always all around us. There's a little fascism all the time in culture. And in certain situations, it boils over and becomes a mass movement and can lead to a kind of political hysteria, basically. But this is basically fascist, the idea that the police should serve as an unrestrained college of people who just enforce what people take to be order, but that not isn't necessarily reflected in the law.
Yeah, it's lawless order.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
Law and order. And also, of course, it depends on whether you think that institution is reflecting your senses of order and enforcement.
Yes.
I think there's this notion that the military and the police are these very right-wing institutions, mm-hmm. and that the people who are in them are very right-wing.
Yeah.
And so there's this idea that, yeah, just take the shackles off of them. I'm okay, essentially, with a military or police rule.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they're my kind of people.
Yeah.
And they're going to rule it my kind of way. If you were to, you know, flip the script and somehow the police were this sort of like woke, you know, army or whatever, they probably would have very different feelings about it. Something very similar happened in the corporate sector.
Mm-hmm.
I always cite to this David Frum thing. Let me see. I may have written about this once. But anyways, this belief that, why have conservatives soured so much on corporations?
Yeah.
And like,
good question.
They're so mad at that corporate leadership and this sort of populism and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not how they used to be, mm-hmm. right? So let me read this from, this is from David Frum.
Okay.
In 1994, he wrote a book called Dead Right.
Okay.
And he says this about, you know, essentially why he loves the fact that companies have so much control over their workforce.
Mm-hmm.
If I am bearded and I notice that my boss and the last four men in my section to win promotion are clean shaven, I will find myself slowly nudged towards the barbershop. If the owner of the gas station across the road from mine smiles a lot and I don't, I will find myself forcing a cheerful manner myself, no matter how snarly I may inwardly feel. People who do not have to work for a living, however, can indulge themselves in 100 little peculiarities of behavior, one reason that the English upper class is so famously odd. Millions of Americans now live as free from the pressure to conform as any English lord, thanks either to the direct receipt of welfare or to the civil service employment where promotion is by seniority and firing is unheard of. The fact, as much as any fashion change, explains the sudden flaunting of ethnic difference in manner and dress that so distresses Patrick Buchanan in his native city. Relatively few vice presidents at Procter & Gamble would dare wear a kente cloth or keffiyeh. Nobody who intends to earn very much of a living in the polymer business can hope to get away with not learning English. But City Hall employees and welfare mothers can do both. The great overwhelming fact of a capitalist economy is risk. Everyone is at constant risk of the loss of his job, or of the destruction of his business by a competitor, or of the crash of his investment portfolio. Risk makes people circumspect. It disciplines them and teaches them self-control. Without a safety net, people won't try to vault across the big top. Social Security, student loans, and other government programs make it far less catastrophic than it used to be for middle-class people to dissolve their families. Without welfare and food stamps, poor people would cling harder to working-class respectability than they do now. So it's just a sort of idea that I think the people who run these corporations are going to use their power to create a conformity with right-wing ways of living.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love it.
In fact, yeah.
All these bulwarks against it, whether it's public employment, whether it's the welfare state, whether it's potentially government regulation, I want all that out.
All of it gone,
because
yeah.
I think the businessman, in my mind, he's just like me. Mm-hmm. And he wants you to cut your beard, stop wearing your keffiyeh,
mm-hmm.
don't dye your hair blue, don't have tattoos, live a normal, you know, leave it to beaver type life. And
yeah.
That's what I want everyone in society to do. And I'm cool just unleashing the fucking tyranny of the company
yeah.
in the labor market so that you conform or die.
Mm-hmm.
But then what happened? They started saying, be woke.
Yeah, DEI.
Do wokeness. Mm-hmm. Don't say racist things or whatever. Use pronouns or what, the whole panoply of stuff. And then now we fucking can't stand it.
Yeah.
So it's like it was never a discipline. It was never like an ideological thing.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, that's a power source that I think is conservative and reactionary. Make it stronger.
Yeah.
Same with police, same with military, whatever.
Yeah.
And if you were to somehow flip those, I'm sure they would all of a sudden be like, oh, I'm not so comfortable with the police, you know.
Yeah,
being,
exactly.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, if the police were taking out people like Brian Thompson, it would be a whole different story.
Right, yeah, if they were kind of quietly killing, rich people and then kind of closing ranks to make it to where you couldn't determine and, you know, acting in an almost kind of mafia-esque way, but in a way that was left-wing or going down the streets and bashing the heads of people wearing not keffiyehs, but Confederate flags on their shirts.
Yeah, exactly.
Then things might, we might have some more different views about the out-of-control state or whatever.
Yeah.
So it goes.
Speaking of keffiyehs, the Vatican has made a lot of people upset. They have their annual nativity scene they put out. You familiar with the nativity scene?
Mm-hmm, that's where Jesus is in the little hay box.
Yeah, also known as a manger, yeah. They put one out every year. They're very beautiful and very fancy. And this year they have baby Jesus laying on a keffiyeh.
Okay.
So Michael Brennan Doherty is going to become Orthodox because of this, basically. There's going to be a mass exodus.
I thought he was Irish.
He is Irish.
Would he forget that part?
He forgot that Ireland is a number one fan of Palestine.
He's so into his Irishness.
I've never seen anything like it.
And yet, here he has the moment where he can kind of be like, all right, I'm throwing in with Ireland. And yeah. instead, he's like, no, actually, I'm just a fucking normie-ass white conservative American.
Yeah. I'm thinking of all the people who have become Catholic in the last several years because it's hot and interesting. And now they're going to have to deal with the fact that Pope Francis is, in fact, not an American conservative. Very different person. Which I personally appreciate, but I think the way that the trad Caths, or wannabes, I should say, the way they deal with this is just to say that Pope Francis isn't actually the Pope.
This reminds me of a tweet from John Fetterman.
Mm-hmm.
God, what a fucking lunatic. He screenshotted the Axios headline, Pope Francis calls for genocide investigation in Gaza.
Hell yes.
And John Fetterman just puts, I reject the accusation and investigation in the strongest terms.
Okay.
All
right.
I'm sure Pope will take it under consideration.
Yeah,
John.
I'll communicate this to Pope
Is
Francis
he even
for
Catholic?
You.
What's even going on? I just can't imagine. I mean, in a way, it's as silly as people who, I don't know, like Trump puts out some kind of statement.
Yeah.
Like Trump says that, you know, he was in an interview maybe today, yesterday mm-hmm. or something, where, as everyone knew, he says he's going to pardon the Jan 6 people.
Yeah.
You know, day one.
Day one.
Be like me retweeting that, being like, I condemn this very highly, actually. Yeah.
People's Policy Project condemns this in the strongest possible terms.
Except he at least is the president of the country that I'm as. It's a little grandiose, but in theory, right? I'm a citizen of a democracy. What are you? Who are you to the Pope? What is your sense?
The Pope doesn't care that you represent the people of the United States,
Pennsylvania.
Honestly. Yeah, he's like, wow, the voters in Pennsylvania probably don't want this done. I got to think twice about it.
I also, there was another Fetterman thing. This just goes to sort of his demented element of it, but... Did he put this on it? Anyways, it was about the shooting. He had a comment on the shooting. And you might think, oh man, he's a real man of the people.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he certainly wants to seem that way. I was going to say, it's such a tragedy that the first person to wear basketball shorts in the Capitol turned out to suck.
Fucking destroyed my whole system. Now I have to wear hiking pants all the goddamn time. They're kind of as comfortable as shorts, but, you know.
Yeah, but at least you don't have the Fetterman look going anymore. Exactly. People would find that unfashionable if you did that.
It's a big loss.
What happened with Fetterman? There was a moment where people...
He had a fucking stroke and lost his mind.
I don't know if that's exactly
That's one
what...
take I've heard, and I believe
okay.
it.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay, here he goes. He's got a number of Twitter accounts. That's what was throwing me. New York had the United Healthcare shooting was inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a Sarah Jones piece. I'm sure it was ultimately like pretty squishy, but
yeah.
I didn't read it. He goes, no shortage of shitty takes on the 2024 election or on this assassination. Why bring in that?
Yeah.
The public execution of an innocent man and father of two is indefensible, not inevitable. Condoning and cheering this on says more about you than the situation of health insurance. And I just, what I love about it is, and other people have pointed this out, there's a way to, here we go. Yes. There's a way to, in a role of leadership, and I would even probably act like this on Twitter for the most part these days.
Yeah.
There's a kind of sobriety that you're meant to perform about certain things, about being, you know, anguished about them.
Yeah.
Whether you are or aren't, or even if you have some kind of other view, you're supposed to kind of take that position, right?
Right.
You know, if you're a kind of responsible person who's very pro-Israel and what they're doing, you would say, God, it really just tears me up to see this death and destruction in Gaza, all these innocent people being killed.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Israel does is under threat and it has a right to defend itself. And, you know, Hamas, October 7th, and this is where we are, and nobody wants it, but, you know, it is the least worst option. We can't have Israel just stand and take these attacks and whatever, right?
Yeah.
And that's the thing you can do, right? And you can kind of play both sides and, you know, whatever. But that's not what he does.
Yeah.
In the context of that, he's so glib about it.
Mm.
So the pager attacks where Israel put a bunch of bombs
in, killed some children.
Pagers that were going to go to Hezbollah or whatever. And yeah, it killed a number of people, including children, just by blowing their heads off.
Yeah.
And
turns out when you've got a pager in your pocket and your child standing next to you, that's about head level for them.
Yeah. I mean, in general, I would say exploding a bomb is not super targeted.
Yeah.
You know, like that's not... Bullet to the head, that's pretty targeted. Bomb, that's kind of the nature. It kind of explodes out.
Yeah.
And again, there's a way you could play this where you can be like, look, oh my God, it's so sad. Obviously, the innocents were killed, but this was a very targeted thing ultimately, right? Most of the people who were hit were Hezbollah. And like, it's better than an invasion, which could have been even worse and had even more collateral damage. So obviously, huge sympathies with the innocents that have died, the children that would, oh my God, it just tears me up. But, right. And instead, when they asked him about it, he goes, I thought what Israel chose to do about blowing up the pagers and then walkie-talkies, and then after targeting and eliminating membership and leader of Hezbollah, I absolutely support that. In fact, if anything, I love it.
Okay. All right.
So it's just, you know what I mean? Like, he likes to be glib, and then all of a sudden, people are actually glib about a killing that involves a sort of populist, you know, working class kind of agitation, and then he somehow becomes the statesman.
Yeah. He's like, excuse me, someone was murdered and you're joking?
The human life is very precious, and I would never, ever say anything to make light of it.
Yeah. One thing that bothers me, I think, about this so much is the level, I mean, you pointed this out, but the level of police resources that are being poured into this particular murder.
Yeah, it's a hard take to make, to be like, they're trying too hard. But it is the case that the amount of that they're trying exceeds normal murders. And
yeah.
You know, you can't say that's just because the victim was who he was. It's obviously, I think, probably more than anything, or at least as much about the fact that it's just the sensational thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when something gets that much attention, you want to, you're driven just from the attention, but also like, it's going to be a huge embarrassment if they can't manage to get this guy.
They
can't, especially if they can't manage to figure out who he is. You know? Like, when something's high profile, the failure is high profile. Whereas if someone gets shot on the street, some random person, and you fail, obviously their friends and family or, you know, they're torn up about it. But broadly in society, people are not aware.
Yeah.
Whereas this is going to be, you know, something people are aware of.
Yeah. Yeah.
But... yeah, there is also that other... I mean, because that's another part of the intrigue here. I don't think it's just who the victim is. It's this the way the guy did it in this sort of movie-like way.
Yeah, with a silencer and shit.
Silencer, and apparently he had some kind of boutique gun, and he wrote stuff on the thing, and he was all masked up, and it was very planned. Like,
yeah.
Even the, like... you know, he wasn't frantic about getting away, you know, and thoughtful about it. Like, you'd think people would freak out and they would, like, run and they would try to get in a car or something because the car is faster. And instead, he's, like, seemingly calm and understands, like, the key here is not speed. The key here is to, like, blend in and be normal in an untrackable way. So I'll ride a bike.
Yeah.
And then I'll take a bus. And,
yeah.
You know, like, and it's just trying to blend, you know, that sort of... like I said, like cinematic killer kind of thing. You don't see a lot. Most killers are really fucking stupid.
Yeah, most.
This guy is obviously quite bright.
Yeah, or I would say most killers don't think much about it before they do it.
But yeah, most killing is impulsive.
Yeah.
But even the premeditated kinds, they're not thinking things like, this guy checked into the hostel, if you believe all the stuff, with a fake New Jersey ID.
Yeah.
So he goes, I need to get into New York City in a way where my identity is not tracked. Well, the only way to do that really is a bus.
Yeah.
Because you can get on a bus, pay some cash, and they don't ever ask who you are.
Yeah.
Or if they might, maybe, okay, I'll show my fake ID.
Yeah.
So he has a fake ID, gets on a bus. You can't do that on a plane.
Yeah.
Right? You could try, but driving is easy to track, right?
Yeah.
Especially if you have a phone, and then where are you going to park, and how are you going to get out? Like, it's easier to run you down. They have license plates.
Yeah.
That, you know? Okay, so need to come in with a bus. I need to have a fake ID. I need to make it to where no one sees my face for the whole time I'm there. Of course, he did slip up, apparently, yeah, with the smile. But the people that were in his room that were being quoted in some of the articles said that he never took his mask off when he was in a hostel with two other people in his room.
Mm-hmm.
He never took his mask off while in the room,
mm-hmm,
and he never told them his name.
Yeah.
So that's pretty, one, that would be a little bit disturbing, but I guess you're like, well, I'm in a hostel.
But it was like a COVID mask, right? You could look like you just...
Sometimes he has the COVID mask. Sometimes he has the balaclava.
Yeah. That would be crazy to be in a hostel room with a dude with a straight up balaclava.
A dude in a balaclava who won't tell you his name.
Yeah. It's comforting. This is, frankly, the level of planning and the selection of target and shit. If we had never met and gotten married, this is the kind of shit you would be doing.
If I never got over my social rut, like at all, mm-hmm, then yeah, you know, and you're just like, well, okay, what am I going to do with my life?
You'd be living in a cabin like Ted Kaczynski, totally off the grid, posting.
Well, it really helps if you don't know anyone.
Yeah, yeah,
then
exactly.
Who the fuck's even, you could show the pictures all day, and like, other than my mom, people be like, I've never seen that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Honestly, the rich of the United States don't know what a favor I've done them by domesticating you before you could go full Unabomber on them. And I wonder if this guy will go down in history the same way as Ted Kaczynski, where there's kind of a muted respect for him in some quarters.
It'll be interesting, right? Because Kaczynski, yeah, he does have that muted respect, but he's obviously also insane.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, you know, if this guy is caught, it's an interesting question of what is going to come out from there.
Yeah.
Is he just like some kind of anarchist dude who has kind of ambient politics? Is he going to have manifestos?
Yeah.
If he does, is he going to go the whole, like, I'm going to defend myself in court and give these like impassioned speeches and shit? Is that going to be his game?
Okay, or rock, honestly.
You know, there's a lot of paths forward. And I mean, if he goes that route, like, whoever gets the movie rights.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's already fucking, I'm sure, in the work somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Hollywood is eat what you kill. They're not concerned about the optics of it. I think
they have to. I mean, they can make a loose leaf. He has the movie rights, right?
Yeah, yeah, they need to find him to get the movie rights.
Yeah, once he's caught, he can make a few million dollars selling the rights to the movie.
What'll happen is a journalist will do the definitive account of this, and they'll get the movie rights and sell them and make a lot of money.
No, I'm going to get in touch with him when he's caught, and I'm going to tell him, don't do that.
Don't do it. Don't let the journalist do long form on you.
I'll be an entertainment lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. You could also be his criminal defense attorney.
There might be NLRB stuff.
You never know. What if he's a scorned employee?
Yeah, I don't think he can go this far.
That's not allowed by the NLRA.
No.
The other big thing that happened last week, I guess too, is Biden pardoned Hunter.
Did we go over this already?
Did we?
Yeah, we did, because I read the statement. That was how we opened that.
I remember
podcast,
that. Yeah.
Another piece of this, and I think this is also somewhat related to some shit Musk has been tweeting, mm-hmm, but there's been this little discourse lit, and I might write something at PPP because it feels like we're back in the old days.
Yeah.
About the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
And it so feels like we're back in the old days.
Yeah.
Where all the kind of like wonky centrists are out there being like, actually, it's not really healthcare administration. Actually, that's not really the thing. It's the provider payment rates and what this is whole, you know, I just remember this so well. And I feel like I need to bring the hammer down.
You got
to
do it.
And I've been tweeting a little bit about it, but it's like, guys, let's not do this again. Do I have to go back on Ezra's podcast and spin his ass around? Like, what are we doing?
It's time to go back to the old you.
The thing about Medicare for All is it is this sort of wild-eyed left-wing kind of thing. I mean, it's not really, because single payer is, it's in fucking Canada. You know what I mean? Not exactly the most left-wing of countries. But it's the most kind of out there left-wing, like, kind of overhaul thing to essentially nationalize the U.S. health insurance system.
Yeah.
That also is just wildly good on the merits.
Yeah.
Just so good on the merits and good in every possible way, right? The replacing the premiums with taxes will compress the income distribution. Yay, egalitarianism, right?
Yeah.
By having a single payer instead of all these dispersed private payers and all the negotiations involved with that, you're able to radically reduce the amount of resources put towards health insurance administration and billing and all that. And that's just a pure efficiency gain. I mean, you save a lot of money, quote unquote, but you also get to save all those resources.
Yeah.
Like hundreds of thousands, million plus maybe people who go to work every day in these institutions, whether they're billers on the provider side or they're insurance workers on the payer side, that just is not needed. A massive amount of efficiency savings there, equal to 1.8% of GDP, which is over $500 billion. That's just on the excess. The excess amount of money we spend on health insurance, on our health insurance system, that would go away if we went to single payer, is over $500 billion a year. And it's not just a money thing. Like I said, it's people, it's capital, it's workers. I might put this in this piece, and I tweeted it out a couple days ago. If you add up, if you add up the budgets of all of the public higher education institutions in the U.S., okay. Let me see how many of those there are. There are 1,892 institutions. Public.
Well, it was also my birthday.
Okay, sorry. Anyways, if you were to add up the costs, the budgets of every single public degree granting, like 2-year college and 4-year college, right? If you were to add it all up.
Yeah.
Not how much we pay, like through public subsidy, but the total costs of those institutions. That would be equal to $450 billion a year. So think about it. University of Texas, University of Alabama, Oklahoma State University, Tarrant County Community College, Orange County Community College, right? All down the line. All those people. Think about how massive that seems to you. The public higher education sector. How many people get up every day and go to work, whether they're professors or administrators or they manage the facilities or the computer systems or whatever. All these buildings, all these campuses, all that. All of that is $450 billion a year.
Yeah.
Excess healthcare administration. Excess is $528 billion.
Yeah.
So just think in your mind, the whole public higher education system, except they don't do anything.
Yeah.
There's no actual like education happening. There's no services being provided. It's pointless. That is what we have built up in the healthcare system.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
If I were to tell you, hey, I got this plan. I got this new program I'm going to set up. Think about something the scale of the public health, the public education college system.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to build something up that's just exactly as big as that. And we're going to employ just as many people in it, but they're not going to actually do anything. Like, we're going to set, they're going to have like a panel in front of them, like you would see it like a nuclear reactor, like a Homer Simpson like panel. And we're just going to have them like push buttons all day, but nothing, the buttons are not attached to anything. And nothing happens. And yeah, that's what I'm going to spend $528 billion on that.
Yeah.
That's healthcare administration in the U.S.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. And people like want to, oh, it's not really that. And so instead of focusing on those two elements, right, the replacement of taxes with premiums, which is pro-egalitarian, the elimination of this wasteful healthcare administration, which is just solid for growth, solid for output, right?
Mm-hmm.
They'll then look at group number three, which is reducing provider payment rates, right? Mm-hmm. So instead of doctors making $400,000 a year, they might make $250,000 a year. If you want to do that, you don't even have to do that. You could just take the administration savings and go home,
mm-hmm.
right? And take the egalitarian benefits of replacing premiums with taxes and go home. You don't have to do the provider payment rate cut. I think you should, but you don't have to. But then they just want to focus on that and be like, that's all it really is.
Yeah.
Because that's the one where you're like, that's just kind of like a distributive thing. That's just like trade-offs. You know, it's difficult and blah, blah, blah. Because they don't want you to focus on this, like, just free money.
Yeah.
$500 billion a year just wasted. They don't want you focusing on that.
Yeah.
In a way, because I think it makes their shit look clownish.
Yeah, it does.
Because they'll tell you, oh, I'm for universal coverage. It's just I don't want to achieve it that way.
Yeah.
Okay, so the way you want to achieve it is also to light $500 billion on fire every year.
Okay.
So, and I'm not saying you can't. You may be able to achieve universal coverage while also lighting $500 billion on fire every year and creating a system of administration that is as big as all public education but doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's not possible. Very rich nation can be extremely wasteful if we want.
Mm-hmm.
But that sucks.
Yeah.
Your shit sucks. And you should feel bad about it.
Yeah.
You need to be sitting here. Your posture needs to be, and this is true of all my enemies on all policy topics. Matt, you're right.
Okay.
And I do feel bad. My stuff sucks compared to yours, but you know, politics.
Yeah, politics.
Politics. Politics. The people, they're not there yet.
The optics.
The people, you know, the veto points.
Yeah.
The public, they're fucking stupid as shit. Yeah. They don't know. But you're right. You're right.
Yeah, only I see the truth. Public's not ready for it.
And that's fine. I'm cool with that. I'm not even going to fight you on that because I don't fucking know. But they're not really satisfied with that.
Yeah.
You could do that. You could run all, that would be a great discourse niche. Is to be like, I'm the centrist who acknowledges that all the social democratic policy stuff, you know, the good, clean, like well-structured stuff, that's actually the best way to structure everything. But you know, the public's so fucking stupid and right-wing.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to kind of find something more in the middle. That's a great niche, but they're not satisfied with that. They want to also, no one is. What a disgusting position to take.
Yeah.
They also want, everyone craves for their policies to also be good.
Yeah.
Not just be the best you can get in a bad political environment. They also want it to be good.
Yeah.
And they always slip back into these little comforting arguments they've come up with that make them think that actually their shit's not that bad. Mm-hmm. And those social Dems and those Dem Soch people, their stuff's actually, they're the ones who don't know.
Yeah.
That's been my experience, at least. But I may need to hit the hammer on this as well, because you know,
you may have to do it to them.
It's really, it's like I just don't have as much time anymore.
Yeah,
but like I feel like, look, I realize Medicare for All is kind of, you know, it's on its back foot. Bernie didn't win. Fucking, we ran Kamala Harris. Jesus Christ,
God Almighty.
Now maybe it's going to come back. Like it'll come. There'll be someone in the primary that pushes it. You know?
I hope so.
Oh, yeah. There'll be at least 2-3 people, I bet. But it can be gone, and we could still acknowledge that it's great.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Let's not, because it's gone, and because we all decided to go back to the right wing as far as Democrats go, let's start now pretending like we didn't realize for a second that it was cool and good and great.
Yeah. We all know what is correct.
Yeah.
Right? We're just hiding from it.
And, you know, maybe the politicians have to pretend, but yeah. The discourse people, unacceptable.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got no excuse.
Did I have other content? I mean, we've hit the hour mark.
Well, I turned 34.
Oh, yes. You had your birthday.
Yeah. We had a birthday party. It was super fun. It was the first time I've had a birthday party since I was a kid. And it was great. It was the best birthday I've ever had, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I watched The Substance last night with a couple of friends.
That's a porno.
I mean, basically.
I was defending workers who were being oppressed in the kitchen, and then I would look up and Liz was watching a porno on the TV.
It is like Margaret Qualley and Demi Moore are both completely naked for at least a half of the screen time. At least, probably more. Margaret Qualley is the woman who was in Maid.
Yeah, she was in the
medical assistance and dying
movie.
Yeah, she is.
No, she was an actual maid in that movie.
Yeah, she was. Yeah,
she's got big eyes.
She's gorgeous, man. Wow. And there was a lot of Margaret Qualley in this movie. It was crazy. It's a great horror movie, very stylish. I had a good time watching it. Reminds me of Possessor by Brandon Cronenberg.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That one, yeah.
One of my favorite horror movies.
For sure.
I thought it was great. Would watch again, but, you know, you have to be in the mood for some really gross body horror. Yeah, that was it. Had a great birthday. Much thanks to you.
You know, I don't know what I did exactly.
You bought the wreath? You bought some...
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of grunt work, I guess, if you count all that. Cleaning and arranging and decorating and
you
things of that nature.
Huge, huge part of it. Huge. Yeah, really, really appreciate
it. And outside of the house as well.
Yeah,
was
you
part
did.
Of the party.
A couple of my friends, when they showed up, were like, this lawn is a taste of Texas right here in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, you're God damn right it is.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
We're number one.
We're number one in our neighborhood, whole neighborhood, really.
Oh, yeah. I would say 10 block radius. No one's got us beat.
Yeah. I'm going to go to the neighborhood Christmas party this year and be like, y'all like my lawn? What about your week lawns?
I'm going outside the 10 block radius where we do have some competition,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to sabotage.
You're going to sabotage them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There can be only one. Honestly,
the depreciation rate of these decorations is really something.
Yeah.
Jane snapped one of the candy canes.
Oh,
I think
dear.
Some of the bush lights are out.
Well, we can fix that.
These things are fixable, but it's just like...
It is annoying. The obsolescence is annoying. Yeah, I'll give you that.
Now, maybe I could get, you know, those like commercial quality ones,
mm-mm.
but they're kind of expensive. But
yeah.
I need to do some math on, I mean, I might be doing this in 30 years, I guess.
Yeah, you will.
At some point. But I mean, getting up on that house, maybe.
Unless
I have to maintain my physical abilities. Though maybe the girls could get on the house at that point.
No, that's not right.
Well, they're in their 30s.
Yeah, no, there's my children. Yeah, that's about it. We'll have more content for you soon.
Mm-hmm.
Adios, mofo.